Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. I am Jessica Ford. I am part of the AFP chapter of Greater Houston, and I want to welcome you to Simone Joyot's Firing Lousy Board Members. Simone Joyot, ACFRE, is described as one of the most thoughtful, inspirational, and provocative leaders in the philanthropic sector. A consultant specializing in fund development, strategic planning, and board development, she works with all types and sizes of nonprofits, speaks at conferences worldwide, and teaches in graduate programs for philanthropy at St. Mary's University, Minnesota. Her books, Keep Your Donors and Strategic Fund Development, are standards in the field. Her feature articles, nonprofit quarterly web column, and blogs receive rave reviews. She founded the Women's Fund of Rhode Island, chaired CFRE International when it became an independent corporation, and regularly serves on boards. Please join me in welcoming Simone Joyot. Thank you.
So apparently a number of you are interested in firing lousy board members, or else it was just the coolest title and you decide to come here and, you know, hang. So curiously enough, I just turned in a manuscript to Charity Channel Press called Successfully Firing Lousy Board Members and Saving Those You Can. So that's going to come out sometime in 2013. You have a handout. Again, you don't have to have it in front of you, but it's a good resource for later. My life partner always reminds his audiences that by tomorrow you will have forgotten 80% of what we talk about today, so keep the handout. So the first thing I want to sort of observe is that exciting though it is, the idea of firing lousy board members, you can't do it until you've done everything else right first. We have to do the right stuff in the right way before we have a right to fire anyone. That makes sense? So we've got to figure out what's the right stuff to do in order to be able to get to the point that we have a right to fire someone who's lousy. So I want to start out with the concept of corporate governance. I want to ask you, who's the expert in your organization? Who's the leader of governance? Throw out some names for me, some people, positions. The board president? Somebody else. The CEO? Anybody else have another version? Chair of the governance committee? Nice. Ooh, interesting. General counsel, the lawyer. Okay. Got to be really careful with lawyers, by the way. But anyway. All right. So as far as I'm concerned, the leader in corporate governance is the CEO. I don't care if it's the CEO or the executive director, whatever term you use. Whoever is hired in that position is the one person we can demand learn about corporate governance. I will advise you to be very cautious about assuming or presuming that any board member, including the board chair, is an expert in governance. I was once doing a governance session with a board. This wasn't a long-term consultancy, but it was a sort of a work session, and I made some statement, and a gentleman on the board leaned towards me, patted my hand, and said, "Well, Missy, that's a really good way to start a conversation. Well, Missy, I've served on more boards than you are old." Now, this was a number of years ago. But the statement that I made, he said, "Well, Missy, I have served on more boards than you are old," and my response was, "Yes, but you're wrong, and I am right." So just be careful. Serving on a board, no matter how many years someone has served on a board, no matter how brilliant they are as the CEO of some big company, does not mean they know what good corporate governance is. In fact, a significant number of boards that I know and observe are dysfunctional. So just as a quickie, on a scale of 1 to 10, with really 10 being extraordinary governance and 1 being not. Where do you think the Penn State board falls? And how about Rutgers? So what are we talking about here? Why are we saying, gosh, the Penn State board or the Rutgers board were not top-notch in governance? I mean, after all, it was the CEOs that sort of didn't deal with issues, so that makes the board totally innocent, doesn't it? No, because the point of the board is to figure out how to ensure that those other things don't happen. And the answer is not, let's everybody now, because of Penn State, from now on should add to their board agenda, how's the pedophilia situation going? Okay, of course not. We'll never be able to come up with each of those questions. But a good board, understanding good corporate governance, is paying attention and figuring out how to raise issues. So again, the CEO is responsible for that. The CEO is the only one that we can say, okay, we hired you, Rhett, go to school and learn about governance, so that you can lead, facilitate, enable the board to do the right stuff. We don't get to fire anybody until we're doing, again, all the right stuff in the correct manner. Now, how many people in here are the CEO? Oh, a fair number. Just as an aside, I would really like you to make sure that in your job description it says something about governance, that you're responsible for enabling it to happen, that you're responsible for knowing the body of knowledge. The CEO job descriptions I look at very rarely have anything to do with governance or mention it. Now let's think about the development officer, because everybody in here who's not a CEO, I assume then you're a development officer of some sort. So why are you here? I mean, you don't have anything to do with governance, do you? Okay, what is it that you have to do with governance? You're the fundraiser. You might help identify candidates for board membership, absolutely. What else do you do as the fundraiser? Live with bad governance. So you might want to be someone who gives input, observations to the CEO. Yes? So in any number of ways, I would agree with you, the job of a really good development officer is to help the CEO understand what really good governance is and what really good fundraising is. As far as I'm concerned, the best fundraisers not only know the body of knowledge in fundraising, they know the body of knowledge in corporate governance. Because when you're working with the Fund Development Committee as a fundraiser, and I'm the chair of the Fund Development Committee, and I'm like starting to wander into management, you need to be able to say to me, as the fundraiser, stop it. Graciously, but you need to be able to say that to me. So fundraisers have to be experts in governance in order to be able to navigate this. So these things have to be in place before we ever talk about firing anyone. CEO and the fundraiser are experts in governance. Continually figuring out how to navigate the waters, empower boards and board members to do what they need to do in governance and, for us, in fundraising. One of the biggest problems that I see in the nonprofit sector, and one of the biggest glories, is that we have volunteer board members, right? Our board members are not paid. These are volunteers. Philanthropy, voluntary action for the common good. The challenge is that many of our board members, or all of them, I hope, are extraordinarily successful in the rest of their lives. Maybe the CEO of whatever, the big bank, all this sort of stuff. And they sometimes, or frankly, too often, believe that their body of knowledge in their own business immediately translates to and positions them as being experts in the fundraising body of knowledge and in governance body of knowledge. So your job, our job, as staff, is to continually have to supportively and appropriately enable our board members to do fundraising and governance well and stop them and tell them when they're wrong. And we have far too many board members and executive directors, just as an aside, who keep saying things like, well, you know, in my opinion, and don't forget I am the CEO of the largest single corporation in our community, hence I know and you don't know. Our job is to be so good at what we do and to know the body of knowledge so well that we are able to say to them, yes, perhaps you have served on more boards than I am old, but I am right and you are wrong, and allow me to explain how and why. If you are not prepared to do that, figure out how to do it in a good way. You don't ever get to fire anybody. And furthermore, you will help create a dysfunctional organization. We have to have the guts to push the body of knowledge and to interpret it. So, before we can talk about firing anybody, we have to be able to distinguish between the concept of the board and corporate governance and the individual board member. I want you to talk with your neighbor. I want this half of the room, from that aisle right there where you are, Walt, to over here. You are coming up with what the concept of a board is and the definition of corporate governance. Okay? So talk with a neighbor, talk with three neighbors. You are specifically looking at the board. Everybody on Walt's side of the room, stand up, Walt, so everybody sees you. Everybody over there, you are coming up with the concept of the individual board member. And you're thinking about performance expectations of individual board members, okay? Now, I'll give you one advanced clue. This is one of the things that I find most organizations don't understand. So here's an advanced statement. The board is not responsible for raising money. They can't possibly be. The board is a group of people. They are at a board meeting. Let's just pretend for a moment that this is our board meeting. Room setup isn't great, but you know, this is our board meeting. Okay? I'm the board chair. All right, so today we as the board at our board meeting are going to fundraise. Go. You can't leave the room. This is a board meeting. Okay, start fundraising. Let me know how it's going. Right? The board is not responsible for raising money. What is the board responsible for when it relates to charitable contributions? They're responsible for assuring that money is raised. How about individual board members? Any role for individual board members in raising money? You know, I don't believe in give, get, or get off. I believe in give, help, get, or get the hell off. It's not give or get. So, again, your assignment from here on, over here, I want you to talk about the concept of a board and what a board's job is, keeping in mind that a board only exists to do corporate governance when it's in the room together. And over here, you're talking about the individual board member and performance expectations. Because if we can't understand this, we can't fire anybody. Start talking now. Go. Remember, you're talking about the board. You are not talking about the individual board member. Yes, good. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay. So the foundation of doing this work, the foundation of the ability to fire anybody, is that we have to have laid all of this groundwork. Now, there's a trick question. Do we want to hear back from the people who are talking about board member performance expectations and the individual board member, or do we want to hear from the board as a whole people first? Yes. Very funny. We want to hear from the board people first. Because board members are a subset of the board. They make up the board. So, what is the job of the board? Somebody, give us an example. What is the job of the board? Someone, yes, ma'am. All right, so the job of the board, the group, is to represent parts of the community as a delegate of that community. Are you sure that's not an individual board member job? All right, so that's nice. So I would not talk about, I would not let any little thought about individual get in there, and I'd talk about the board is supposed to be a microcosm of our community. And that's part of the way we pick board members. Very nice. Yes, ma'am. Only just give me one. All right, so you want the board as a group to be responsible for, accountable to, ensure that our organization performs in an ethical manner. Sound good? It's something that we want the board to do. All right, somebody else. Something else that's an accountability of the board, the group. Very nice. So part of the board's job is to ensure the sustainability and the vitality of the organization. And they do all these things we're talking about at a board meeting as a group, which means they look at information they have conversations about. Give me another thing that is the board's job. Yes, ma'am. So the board together sets strategic direction. Now, just as a little sort of sidebar. Does the CEO have any role in any of this stuff? Really? I mean, can't we just send her to another room? Of course not, if not if we're smart. So all of what the board does in corporate governance is in partnership with the CEO. Give me another item, what the board does. Yes. Hire, appraise the performance of, set the compensation for, and if necessary, fire. Well, yes, support before we fire. Yes. I mean, that's part of the overall thing. Very nice. All right, one more. What is the job of the board? You can't, don't just say fiduciary. You got to tell me something. Give me a sentence, starting with a verb. Okay, so responsible for to ensure fiduciary health. So part of ensuring fiduciary health is, right, ensuring that there's an appropriate balance of expense and income, ensuring that there's a strategy to have income, and then that can link to setting the charitable contributions goal, which is part of the budget, and ensuring that we have a fund development plan to do it. So, again, the key is you can't fire anybody until you've set the rules of employment, even if it's unpaid employment. And because people are so confused about governance, you actually have to define governance in some depth. We have all been taught management our entire lives. Finish your homework, and you can go out and play, right? We have not been exposed very much to the concept of governance as a collective activity. Now, let's take a look at this collective activity, and I want you to think about what makes groups effective. Because, again, the board is a group. What makes groups effective or conversely ineffective? Anybody? What makes a group effective? Yes, ma'am. You were just waving your hand. You weren't really raising. Okay. What makes a group effective? Taking collective responsibility. So the concept of, just because I'm not on the executive committee, so I guess I'm not responsible. Okay, now, what did somebody back here say? Participation, as in, what did you say over here? So when we say participation in the group that is the board, the primary thing we are talking about is paying attention, reading the material, voicing opinions, but let's make sure that it's not opinions like, you know, my opinion, I mean, I know there's a body of knowledge, but I'm really not very concerned about it. In my opinion, the best way to raise money would be to have a bake sale. We don't want opinions like that, right? So the job of a board member is to talk based on having read stuff, based on being prepared, raising questions. Silence is consent, and dysfunctional politeness is high-risk behavior. I watch boards all the time. I look at their meeting minutes. They're not raising questions. If somebody asks too many questions, they purge that person for being, you know, the little what, outlier voice. So, is it okay to have a board member who is an active participant in committee meetings but is silent at board meetings? Is that okay? No. Corporate governance happens at the board meeting, not at the committee meetings. You don't get to be silent at board meetings. Now, I always like to tell people, I am your dream board member and simultaneously your biggest nightmare. I am a dream board member because I read every piece of material. I compare it to last month's. I write notes. I come prepared. And I am prepared to participate in the conversation. Now, this now starts to morph into big nightmare. I think very quickly on my feet. I am very well prepared. And I am somewhat articulate. What's my danger, bad board member behavior potentially? I dominate the meeting. I can do that. So, what do you have to do with me? I didn't hear that. What do you have to do? What? Make me secretary so I can have to take minutes. Oh, in your wildest dreams, you think that's going to stop me? What do you have to do? I'm already engaged. I am overly engaged. No, this is at the board meeting. This is the only time governance is happening. Oh, that's smart, which means I have to have asked my questions before the board meeting as long as they're points of information, not content conversation that has to happen at the board meeting. I always follow the agenda. I'm still your worst nightmare. Certainly you can limit the time each participant, you know, talks. So does he. Well, sure. You, yes, back there. Yes, so you can have, very nice, you can have set guidelines about how we have conversations. You have to be equipped enough to say, excuse me, someone else has to talk now. You have to be able to, you have to look at someone and shake them off. Do you, anybody remember the movie, what is it, Bull Durham, where the catcher, my sports things are problematic, but you have to shake me off. You have to go. And then if that doesn't work, you have to say, Simon, you need to be quiet now. Because you could actually talk to me that way. So the job of the board chair is to facilitate conversation, which means to look at people who are more quiet, who process in a different manner, and say, yeah, but Jelaine, do you have something we'd like to hear from you now? And then when somebody else starts to talk who's talked before, you say, hold that thought. We need to hear new voices. That's how you manage. All right, so what else makes a board effective? We've got the participation, the conversation. We even have set an agenda. What else makes a group effective or not effective? All right, so they have a sense of what they're supposed to be doing, like at that meeting and in general, which somebody else had to tell them for that meeting. So that goes back to our leadership. Our board chair, and our executive director, CEO. What else makes groups effective or not effective? Very nice. We need to address this one issue by the end of the meeting. So we may have to shorten conversation about some other things. Of course, if there was one thing we had to accomplish by the end of the meeting, where would we put that on the agenda? Early. Forget Robert's Rules of Order for meeting agendas. It's silly. What else makes groups effective or ineffective? Yes. Their ability to make a decision, to know when a decision has to be made versus we need two more meetings to talk about it. Because sometimes we do need two more meetings to talk about it. Yes. Exactly. The ability of the board chair to manage all this process, to summarize the key points, to facilitate conversation. Is that how you pick your board chairs? Because of those skills? If you don't, your governance committee needs to talk about what's the purpose of a board chair, what do we expect of them, and what skills do they need? Because that is what a board chair is supposed to do. A board chair makes no decisions, him or herself, because any decision a board chair could think of to make is probably a management decision. Because all governance decisions are made by whom? The board, not the board chair. So imagine that in your firing, it's not only firing lousy board member Walt, it's firing lousy board chair Daryl. Okay? A lot of firing can go on here. All right, now let's talk about the board member performance expectations that support the concept of good governance, and we already have the voicing, talking, participating. What else are board member performance expectations specifically related to being on the board? What else? Specifically relating to being on the board. Give me a board performance expectation over there. Y'all talked about them. Say again, someone. I want comments specifically related to being on the board, doing governance. Giving a gift is not related to governance. It's absolutely essential to do, however. What am I supposed to do? Over here. Okay, so you actually expect me as a board member to have reviewed material in advance before I get to the meeting? Okay. Oh, now I'm expected to attend the meeting. And I'm supposed to read the material. I suppose you want me to bring it too so you don't have to give me another copy? Okay, so, but again, I want you to hold that thought because right now I'm talking about what we do at the board meeting as a board member. So, just as an sidebar, do not ever provide extra copies of anything at a board meeting. Ever. You send them to us in advance. We're big kids. There is no job anyone has where if you show up at a meeting without the stuff your boss gave you to, what do you think is going to happen? Oh, you know, I forgot to bring a pencil and paper to the meeting. Nah, I didn't read the stuff, you know. I realize you're my boss, but it just didn't seem that interesting. Or I read it, but you know, I left the stuff back in my office. Go get it. I once told a staff colleague of mine, I was the executive director, I said, if you ever come to a meeting with me again, without a writing implement and a piece of paper, I will fire you. All right, now tell me other things that board members do that are not specifically related to doing the board's work, but are related to being a leadership volunteer. Give a gift. What else? Ambassadors for the mission and vision. Yeah, don't like sit at a dinner party and have people talking about how cancer is so awful and no one's doing anything about it, and never mention that the cancer organization on whose board you serve is actually doing something. Yep. So an ambassadorial role. What else? When we think of individual board members, somebody new, I will point at you if you don't raise your hand. Understand programs. Okay. Yes, sir. Outreach. So a little bit like the ambassadorial role. Yes. So one of the jobs that we as individual board members should be expected to do is to identify those who might be interested in the cause, the issue, potentially introduce them into the organization, for a volunteer position, serving on a committee as a non-board member, being a donor of money, and potentially someday being on the board. Very nice. Yes. Okay, so our colleague here is talking a little bit like the ambassadorial outreach role, saying it would be nice if board members would also, this is as an individual, take on things like letters to the editor, blog posts, etc. So I want to hold that advocacy thought for a minute. I would want to be very cautious about a board member blogging and letters to the editor without some sort of review by the institution. Because in my enthusiasm, I might inadvertently say something not so good. Now, your comment about board members being advocates, absolutely. Extension of ambassadorial, if particularly in this day and age, certainly in the United States, where public policy is having a huge impact on the nonprofit sector, I want advocates.
And there's a whole process in guiding
that. Absolutely. So, and there's, and again, we don't just let people go out and advocate without, we don't let any board member speak on behalf of the institution as a spokesperson for the institution. All of that has to be controlled at the CEO level. All right, so the key here is, you got to know what the job description of the board is. You got to know what the performance expectations of the individual board member are. And then we have to use them in recruitment. And all this has to happen or we can't fire anyone. So, now let's look at the recruitment process. How many people in here have served in the past or are currently serving on a board? All right, so everybody has that experience. I want you to reflect on the moment when they contacted you. Did they say, "Hi, you're a longtime donor of ours. We love you. You love us. We would like to talk with you about serving on the board." So that's one variation. If they say that, what's your expectation? "We'd like to talk with you about serving on the board." What's your expectation then? Okay, maybe you're going to tell me what you expect, but when they say, "I want to talk to you about serving on our board," are you expecting to? You're expecting to be asked. All right. Do you really want to have a recruitment process that promises board membership without having had a conversation with the candidate to see if they understand the job description, the performance expectations, etc.? Do you really want to do that? No. You do not want to set the expectation of "we're going to ask you. We know you really well." Okay? I mean, for heaven's sake, what, 60 hours minimum we spent together, Jolaine, right? I really, really know you. You know me, right? But you know what? I still don't know for sure after we talk about, you know, the way we do work as an institution. I don't know if that's a good match for you. I don't know if you can go to board meetings on our scheduled board time because you have, what, a job, kids, a farm, a ranch, all sorts of stuff. So you don't ever say, "We'd like to get together to talk with you about being on the board." You say, "We'd like to get together with you to talk about possible, you know, shared interests. Oh, I do want to assure you this is not a solicitation for money. I'm going to tell you that. But, you know, I want to get together, chat with you about common shared interests and see if, you know, there's some interest. And we have a number of volunteer opportunities, you know, sort of being task force members at some point, or perhaps committee members, because of course non-board members serve on all committees. And you know, we do have board positions annually, and so just wanted to get together and chat with you." It's a screening interview. It's not a, "Hi, how'd you like to be on our board?" Because during that conversation, you begin to think, oh, oh dear. Wow. Somebody told us she would just be swell. But I'm not getting a swell vibe here. I do not want her on my board. Imagine the board who contacted me, and we had this kind of conversation, and they were asking me what my other committee and board experience was, and I said, I'm your dream board member and your worst nightmare, all wrapped in one. You think that they kind of maybe went, ooh, because they did. And what do you think they asked me? Tell us, yeah, you might want to be the chair. Tell us about why you're a nightmare board member. Because they wanted to know what that was going to be like and whether they wanted it or not. So, you can't fire anybody until you have a screening interview. So we have a screening interview. We think that maybe there's something in common. We want to move it into, all right, we have board positions at some point. Here's what the board does. Here are the performance expectations of board members. Do you want those candidates to agree to the performance expectations of board membership before you nominate them? Absolutely. So you go over every single performance expectation. You talk about the talking at board meetings. You talk about the advanced preparation. You talk about no extra copies provided. You talk about giving a gift. Now, how are you going to talk to somebody about giving a gift when the whole issue of money is challenging, and let's pretend you're asking someone to join your board, and on your board are two trust fund babies and two CEOs of the largest corporations in the community. And you're asking someone who has no comparison financially to them, but is a great neighborhood organizer, connected with, blah, 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 you want them on the board. What are you going to do? You're going to say everybody gives a gift? Okay, what else are you going to say? So you're going to say to the best of your personal ability? Oh, nice. Give a gift at the level of where you care how it's used. Right? Right, it's not a threat. No, because if you're coming on our board, we want to expect to be one of your top charities. Otherwise, we don't want you on our board. We want to look and find out that you give more money to other places. So we have to secure all of this commitment in advance. All right? Yes? Absolutely. You can't. If you do not have a job description of the board and performance expectations of the board member, you cannot fire anybody. So go back to your office and go through a conversational process with the board to set the job description of the board and the performance expectations of the individual board member. You don't get to fire anybody until all of this is done. So if you were hoping that you could fire someone tomorrow when you get back home, not so much. Now, your handout has a sample board job description. It has sample performance expectations of board members. Those are also repeated on my website. So that's what you got to set all of this stuff up before you can ever talk about someone's performance. Make sense? Yes. Right, so we have here as an example, a CEO decided, so on the one hand we can call this leadership, I mean that genuinely, we have a CEO who decided there was going to be a board scorecard. Who actually decides whether the board's going to have a scorecard or not? The board. Who decides what the content of the scorecard is? The board. Who leads, facilitates, and empowers the board to understand that a scorecard would be good? The CEO in partnership with the board chair and the governance committee. So he just had it ass end backwards, that's all. Turning around. Yeah. Now you also made the comment about conversation. If I were you, I would not go to the board. If I were a board chair or the CEO, I would not go to the board chair or the board with, here's a sample job description. Why not? Oh, that's nice because I called it a sample. Okay. There's no buy-in. The purpose of a board is to have conversation. The purpose of this group is to have conversation. You don't give anybody a draft of anything if you want good conversation and buy-in. So collect all the great drafts you want. Make sure there was a conversation. And then you say, well, of course, we as staff will go draft something based on this conversation. And then you go draft something, like the sample that you saw that you liked. And if there are parts of the sample you saw that you liked that you were afraid that they might not raise, then you got to get somebody planted in the room to raise it. Because you have to be very careful about adding things that nobody ever talked about. Okay. So, finally, we have the board job description. The board job description, and we have the performance expectations of the board member, common to all board members. Do we have to vote on this? Yes, the board has to adopt this as policy so it can be enforced. Now we're talking. In fact, the last item in my board member performance expectation is agree to step down if you don't adhere to these performance expectations. That was a suggestion at some sort of conference like this. Somebody said, we should add. Last item, you don't do it, you're gone. Just say it nicely. Okay, so we've got all of that in place. I would suggest to you that one of the other items you want in place is a bylaw statement that says, in essence, the following. This board can remove board members for non-performance. So there's a sample set of bylaws on my website in the free download library that has the perfect statement. Do not ever put in your bylaws or make as a policy, if you miss 3 consecutive board meetings, you are assumed to have resigned. What's wrong with that statement? Well, it's only limited to attendance. That's good. What else? Pardon? No, it's not hard to enforce at all. You've missed 3 consecutive board meetings, you're out. The board. We'll get... Okay. Or how about I miss 2, I come to 1. I miss 2, I come to 1. I miss 2, I come to 1. Think about that a minute. I miss 2 meetings, I come to 1. I miss 2 meetings, I come to 1. Then I come to 2, and then I miss 1. And then I'm back on the miss 2 meetings, come to 1. I don't care how brilliant I am. Do you want me as a board member? No. And you have to set that norm within the organization. So attendance is vitally important. I don't care how good I am elsewhere. If I'm not at the board meeting having the conversations, I'm not a good board member. If I'm at the board meeting and I'm silent, I'm not a good board member. So this fantasy we all have of sticking in our bylaws, you miss 3 consecutive board meetings and you're gone, is like, who cares? I missed 2, I came to 1. And also, do not give me that business about excused or unexcused absences. Think about it a minute. I told you I couldn't be there, so it's an excused absence because I told you. Well, it is. That's the way we seem to behave. I told you I couldn't come, so it's an excused absence. Again, I'm missing 2, I come to 1. No matter how big a donor I am, no matter how important and special I am, you don't want me on your board. It's not the right time for me, apparently. You have to talk these things through as an institution to set the norms within the group so that you have the right expectations and enforcement and consequences. So, you want a statement in your bylaws that says, with due process, we can remove any board member we want. Right? And I want you to look at the example in my bylaws because it actually gives you very good language that says the person actually has the right to be heard. Okay? Now, do you want, in your best imagination, do you want to bring someone before the board in accordance with the bylaws, with due process, and vote them off the board? Do you want to do that? Of course not. You don't want it in the minutes. You don't want to embarrass someone by doing it, no matter how awful they are. What you want to do is never enforce that bylaw statement, but you want it there, just in case. Because what we're really talking about when it's firing lousy board members is, number one, we're talking about enhancing attrition, which we'll talk about, or thank and release. Okay? So, okay, based on everything we've been talking about, give me a quick summary about what makes a board member lousy. Non-attendance at board meetings, non-participation, what else? No giving of money, pardon? Coming unprepared. Dominating the meetings and not responding when you are facilitated to not do that. So remember, we all have bad days. We go off weird paths. But if we can be facilitated, that's all right. But if we refuse to be facilitated, not so good. What else makes a lousy board member? Yes. Well, I don't know. You know, all I did was tell my life partner. Now, so I don't know. What do you care? I told my life partner what happened at the board meeting. I didn't exactly say it was confidential. And so he did tell those people at the dinner party the other night. But, you know, they're all friends. So what's the problem? You have a confidentiality statement, and you have a conflict of interest statement, and they are signed at the start of every single board year, and you explain to people what it means. Not at all. What's a breach of... You can ask a staff person or anybody to say, I don't get this part. Explain it to me. I don't think that's a breach of confidentiality at all. Oh, I don't think that's not a breach of confidentiality either. It's a learning moment. But you could also have a conversation at a board meeting about what is confidential. What does confidential mean and what does conflict of interest mean? Have those conversations so people set a benchmark and they have an understanding. Because again, what I thought was confidential wasn't what you thought, or conflict wasn't what I thought and you thought. And so then how can we, again, punish people for that? Yes? So we have a concept of unity of voice, but not unanimity. So I want you to think about that. Unity of voice once a decision is made, but not unanimity in making the decision. So the best boards have board members who speak out and argue. And they're there sort of yelling graciously at each other at a board meeting. Couldn't disagree with you more, Daryl. But what I don't say is I couldn't disagree with you more, Daryl, you stupid eyeglass-wearing person. Right? But do not think that arguing is bad. It's good if people are passionate about the organization. But then we make a decision. And once the decision is made, it's the unity of voice. So I don't, you know, when somebody says to me, wow, so your board made this decision, I say, yeah, I disagreed. I thought it was a stupid decision, but they voted that way. What I say is, we had a marvelous, robust conversation, and this is the decision we made together. How about those parking lot conversations? You know, you come out of the board meeting, there's some couple people standing by the car, and when you walk by, they're all of a sudden silent. We don't get to do that either. That's a lousy board member. Does that mean we can't talk as board members outside the meeting? Of course we can. But we can't talk very much about something that should be discussed at a board meeting. How about Massachusetts Keith? Massachusetts Keith was a board chair that I worked with. His approach to board leadership was, I know I'm right. When he said that to me, I said, do you mean you're a lawyer and the board was going to do something illegal? He said, no, I know I'm right. I said, are you an accountant? And they were going to, you know, not follow the accounting regulations. No, I simply know I'm right. I said, but that's not possible. The board decides together what's right at that moment. Oh, no, he said, I know I'm right. And so what I do is I get all my ducks in a row outside the board meeting so that when we walk in, I know they're going to vote my way. I said, but you can't do that. That's not good board leadership. And he said, no, that's the way I do it. What should that board have done? Removed Massachusetts Keith, the rogue board chair. Censure. Tell them that's not acceptable. Tell them it's not acceptable. You can't behave that way. We will not accept it. All right, so you need to talk with your board about all these things. The board should have a conversation about lousy board membership. The governance committee should facilitate, design these conversations that the board's going to have. You're going to set certain rules, guidelines, policies, but part of it's going to be a norm. So, for example, I would not choose to say, if you miss 3 board meetings, you're out. So not only would I not say consecutive ones, I wouldn't say if you miss 3 board meetings, you're out. Because, in fact, they may not, I might have wished they'd attended more board meetings, but they're also very active in committees, they're very active at the board meeting, et cetera, et cetera. I might talk to them about attendance. But you have to have a norm within the group. What agitates us as a board? We're going to have certain rules, but we're also going to say, what agitates us? When do we want board members to be spoken with? So now we're moving into the, all this stuff is in place. We had the conversations. We did the right screening. Now we get to start talking about the feedback process and the firing. So, as a board chair, I make it a policy of my own to call board members who are absent. So this has not risen to the level of, hello, governance committee, problem with this board member. Deal with it. I am still in the, gosh, hello, board member. We missed you at the meeting. How's it going? All right? Well, it was the only night Fleetwood Mac was in concert, and so I decided to go. No, we only want board members who are willing to inconvenience themselves on our behalf. So I know you like Fleetwood Mac, but it's too bad. All right? So I, as a board chair, will call board members to just touch base. Remind them how important it is for them to be there. But at a certain point, it's no longer up to me. At that point, the board, as the board chair, and you, sir, as the executive director, CEO, we're talking about board members, right? I'm a little bothered about Joe, aren't you? And so we say it's going to go to the governance committee. And the governance committee is going to look at Joe's performance, and then they're going to say, we need to formally talk with Joe. right? It is not the CEO who talks with Joe. It might be the board chair after the governance committee says, why don't you go talk with Joe, Simon? It's certainly not the entire governance committee. We are inviting you, Joe, to a hearing in front of the governance committee. Come prepared. No, it's someone is going to talk with Joe. So the concept of enhancing attrition is you're trying to get Joe, the lousy performer, to see that he is a lousy performer, and then he has two choices, we hope, right? What's the first choice? Get better, improve your performance. And what's the second choice? Resign. So we're trying to have this conversation with Joe in a gracious, professional, supportive, but serious manner. You've been missing a lot of board meetings. Apparently, your personal professional life, you know, we respect that, but you're missing a lot of board meetings. You haven't been going to the committee meetings. When you are at the board meetings, you don't seem to be prepared, so you're not able to participate in the conversation, and you don't have the common thread from past board meetings. We need your wisdom. We need you to be an active board member. Those are the performance expectations we discussed. So, Joe, what are you thinking? Now, what I'm hoping Joe's going to say is, I will improve my performance. So then I get very specific. I'm the representative of the governance committee. So you mean you will be at the next board meeting and the one after that? Remember, it's the fourth Tuesday of every month at 4 o'clock. Yeah, I'll be there. Because we need you to be there, Joe, because this is a serious expectation. Joe doesn't come. Now what? Now we're moving into improvement's no longer an option. So now apparently it's me, the representative of the governance committee, who's going to talk to Joe again. You said, Joe, after our last conversation, that you were going to improve, that you could. It didn't happen. This just isn't working. So what we're hoping Joe's going to say is, yes, you're right. My personal and professional life has, you know, really changed. I certainly understand that, Joe. It seems as if this is not a good time for you to be on this board. And Joe says, well, yeah. Maybe not. Yes, indeed. I respond with alacrity. Yes, indeed, it is not a good time for you to be on the board. You could perhaps be on a committee, because we don't have those, you know, that's not the same set of rules. We certainly, you know, would treasure your wisdom and contact you periodically, but it sounds like it's, you know, not a good time for you to be on the board. I'm trying to get Joe to acknowledge that this is not the right time to be on the board. The first thing I do is give him a chance to improve. But he didn't. Or he did, but then he didn't come to the next meeting. And it's just the same thing over and over. So it's time for you to step down, yeah. Send a resignation email. And we're just going to say, you know, your personal professional life has changed. So you're not able to stay on the board. The intent is not to embarrass him or her. Now, it's all fine and dandy if at the board meeting we say, well, Joe had to resign, you know, his personal professional life. And over here on this side of the room, they're all snickering like, yes, the governance committee enhanced his attrition. Don't say it out loud and don't snicker so loudly. We want Joe to leave but still feel positive about us. Yes? Yeah, Joe. Then we send him the thank you letter for having served on the board and that he has now resigned. Because actually Joe may never get his butt in gear to write the resignation letter because apparently he's going to Fleetwood Mac a lot. Everybody does know who Fleetwood Mac is, right? I just don't want to be so generationally out of tune. So, yeah, no. If he doesn't send the resignation letter, we send him a thank you letter, and he is resigned. Yes?
Yeah,
Yes. Okay, so I believe in term limits. There's term length and term limits. So your term length might be 3 years, right? Term limits mean you could maybe have 2 consecutive 3-year terms. An important norm to have in your organization is just because you could get a second term does not mean you will. But I don't find term limits an acceptable way to release non-performing board members. If my term is coming up in 6 months, fine, let me stay for the 6 months. But I've been a lousy performer all my first year. You're going to keep me 2 more years? Chicken! Remove non-performing board members. So, you should be looking at board member performance every single year. The governance committee sits there and looks at attendance, preparation, gift giving, participation in fundraising assignments, service on the committee, and they talk to non-performers. And the only time you would let someone run out their term is if there was like maybe 6 months left. Otherwise, you remove them. Don't underestimate how demoralizing it is for the rest of the board members who are inconveniencing themselves on your behalf and Joe gets to stay. And do not misunderstand the dynamics around power and privilege, where it appears as if the people you're keeping are those of higher socioeconomic status who not infrequently look like what? Say it to me. What? White males, thank you. This is not any comment against white males. As I wrote in my blog the other day, some of my best friends and family members are white men. That doesn't mean that we're going to keep you just because you have a lot of money. Nor does it mean you keep the trust fund women and the 2 CEO women just because they've got so much money. So, enhancing attrition is the ultimate goal. That's how we do this. But Joe didn't get it. Remember Joe? We tried the feedback. We tried the whatever, and he said, no, I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to stay. And at a certain point, there's no more, gosh golly, Joe. I'm sorry, Joe. This is not working. We are asking you to resign. That's the thank and release part. The norm you want in your organization is that no single board member is more important than the health and effectiveness of the corporation. That no single board member gets to not perform for some reason and we all just accept it. Because it can be contagious like a virus. As passionate as I am about the cause, I am tired of 3 board members disrupting meetings, not doing what they said, unwilling to inconvenience themselves, and I'm tired of trying to be a good board member. And at some point, the good board members may leave because they're tired of the dysfunction. And I will bet you that any of you in your community, that it's common knowledge who the bad boards are. Oh, yeah. The XYZ organization. Famous for bad governance for decades. Who wants to be known that way? Who wants to say, no, you know, it's just not the right time for me to serve on your board. Thank you so much for the invitation. And then I go back and I say to my friends, you know, I very graciously said it's not the right time for me to serve on their board. I wouldn't serve on their board if it was the last board alive. They don't have rules. They don't have guidelines. They don't have good conversation. They've got domineering people. They've got a rogue board chair called Keith. This is not a place I want to be. Yes, sir. Yes. Yes. You know, that's one of those very, I mean, the same thing holds true for staff. And there's the don't say anything bad because you could be sued. And then there's the, no, I know, but they can sue you for defamation of character no matter what. So I probably, if I knew, I mean, I would probably talk, I would never put anything in writing. I would talk to a person privately and say, here's been my experience, or here's been our experience. I think I would. I'm tired. I feel some sort of moral, ethical obligation that we can't keep passing around bad people. Yes? Okay, a good board member who won't give. All right, not giving a charitable contribution is unacceptable. You cannot represent a cause, and when you're a board member, you cannot represent a cause without giving a financial contribution personally. And so that has to be made very clear in the recruitment process, and we have to be very clear about don't compare me to the trust fund people and the CEOs because I don't have that kind of money, so you've got to make me feel comfortable. Not the amount. You have to establish expectation that I'm expected as a board member to give to the best of my personal ability. And your job is to ask me for a gift. Do not let me invent it on my own. You ask me for a gift. So when we ask Walt, who's the single father of six children, and he works in the Washington, D.C., public school system kitchen, as I recall, wasn't it, Walt? But he's a new board member. We are so excited because he's an organizer and all this sort of stuff. So, Walt, we were wondering if you would consider a gift of $25. Not to be confused with, what's your name, ma'am? Kim, who is the CEO of the largest company in the state, actually. Actually, the region. It's huge. We're asking you, Kim, to consider a gift of $5,000 to start. Yes. Yeah. You. Except this gentleman. Go ahead.
You've given us some excellent ideas. Could you address the reality that in many cases the board chair sets the tone for the board and the CEO relationship to the partnership?
Yeah. So first of all, I live in the real world. There's nothing I'm suggesting anytime, anywhere that I haven't done as a board chair or as a committee chair or as an executive director or as a chief development officer, all right? And I am challenging us all to make the real world be the way it should be. So a good CEO builds relationships with all other board members and never only has a single relationship with, say, the board chair. Because the CEO, there are bad board chairs. It's like a disease, okay? And the CEO needs to be able to position him or herself to circumvent the bad board chair. So I would be, as the CEO, regularly talking with other board members about, you know, how do we set compensation? Who should be on the performance appraisal task force? It should never only be the board chair. And you want to be working closely with the governance committee to talk about what do we look for in board chairs. So no decent board allows one person, including the board chair, to set compensation or to do the performance appraisal. So again, this goes back to how are we interviewing and screening board members to say, you know, how comfortable are you fighting a board chair? I mean, say that to board members. That's the way I would do it. And I've had a lot of success circumventing, circumnavigating, et cetera. I actually once, and you can only do this once, I had a governance committee. I had board members saying to me constantly as an exec, if Louis, that was his name, is reappointed as board chair, it'll just be a debacle. And I said, I know. You're a board member. Tell the nominating committee that. But they kept telling me that. So I then talked to the nominating committee chair. I said, all these board members are saying this. You've got to deal with this. He said, yeah, I know. Like, that really inspired me. So one day I was talking to the wife of the nominating committee chair, and she was giving me the same business. You can't let the nominating committee renominate the board chair. It's like, look, I said, let me really be clear. If this board renominates and reelects a board chair that every single board member has told me they don't want, I will quit because I won't work for a board that behaves that way. Guess who she told that to? Her husband, the chair of the nominating committee. I didn't have to quit. Apparently, it got around that I was so dismayed at a board performing that way, and they didn't want to lose me. Daryl, and then you, sir.
Just a comment. You are
the yes.
Giving one of the rules culturally specific to America, much as we like our European and African
and we have to change that. So Daryl's comment is, and it's a very good point, that this is, we have to think culturally, and so culturally is not just across country borders. It's culturally within whatever community you live in, whether it's Toronto or Brussels or wherever. And our colleagues in many other countries don't have boards that are like we have in North America quite as much. So we have to learn from other countries, and other countries have to learn from North America. And I'll state it again. I think it's morally and ethically a problem to serve on a board and ask for charitable gifts and not give a charitable gift yourself. And that will be something I'll be saying to the French Fundraising Association in June, which ought to be really popular. But come on. Yes, sir. Right, right. Yeah. You do it slowly and carefully. So the vast majority of my clients are smaller. They're not a university. They're not Penn State. There isn't a client I have, no matter the size and all volunteer, that we haven't been able to carefully, slowly, move through the concept of what's a board, what does a board do, how does it do it at its board meetings? And what are board member performance expectations? There's no organization of no matter what size or type that I haven't been able to get them to go through that slowly. You're the fundraiser or the CEO. You have to help your organization do that. It could take 2 years, 3 years. It doesn't matter. And by doing all that, you will have to fire far fewer board members because they will have been a part of this learning process and they will have learned and they will now be able to do this. So it doesn't happen overnight. If you try to fast track it, it implodes. It's not fair to people. So you have to do it slowly and carefully. Do not use as an excuse, we're too small. Don't use as an excuse, we're not smart. In fact, I have had more smaller organizations who are willing to take the risk to have these conversations than large institutions. And excuse me, I'm speaking as a founder. The job of a founder is to set up a community-based organization. And the job of a board is to graciously remind the founder that they can fire him or her. And smart founders leave. Because it's not fair to have the founder there too long. And these are all the kinds of conversations that should be coming up. This is what boards talk about. Okay, it is 2:30. People should feel free to leave. And if people want to stop and talk with me afterwards, they can. Thank you very much.